Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Be a part of The Drive. Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at espnau.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Friday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Nice looking day. It's been a little chilly, but you know, it is December, and we're less than 3 weeks away from Christmas. And just appreciate the beautiful weather. Welcome in to the Friday Drive. Bill, Dan at the controls. Drew is off for a few days. Classes have ended at the university, and Drew is headed down south, I think, to visit with the family for the next week or so. So we'll have the controls in the meantime. Dan's got it today, and Coach Don Dunn's in with us as well. Don, how you doing today?
Doing great, thanks.
Here we are on this Friday. It is, well, as a matter of fact, conference championship play gets started tonight. Mm-hmm. The ones that will determine participation in the college football playoff, though, are tomorrow.
Yeah, and I think it's probably too bad that just the way things shook out, maybe this is the way things are going to shake out when you have a playoff that's 12 teams or larger with this current format. But it doesn't feel like there's a ton of intrigue as far as who gets in and who gets out.
Not really.
Based on tomorrow's conference championship games.
The ACC championship game really is the only one that seems to have much intrigue, and I'm not so sure that there's a lot of intrigue there.
No, the bettors seem to be pretty confident that Bama's getting in no matter what. I mean, the fact that Bama, I think that, you know, ESPN says it's a 99% chance they get in with an SMU win, and a 70-something percent chance they get in with a Clemson win. You know, they still don't like, you know, they don't like the chances of the ACC getting a second team into this college football playoff. And yeah, I suppose there will be, like, the most interesting thing that could happen would probably be an SMU loss, because then there's the argument
Close Clemson win.
Yeah, well, I mean, what do you do with an SMU team that's ranked ahead of Alabama right now? Should they fall behind Alabama just for losing?
You wave goodbye to them, I think. And well, I thought that's what everyone thinks.
Well, and you raised an interesting point, you know, earlier in the week that people have been talking about teams forfeiting or skipping conference championship games. I don't know what the rules are right now, but I think it's very interesting to me. Right now, based on the rankings this past week, the committee has decided that SMU's resume is better than Alabama's through 12 games. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to me that if SMU decided we're not playing in the ACC championship game, we are going to stay inactive this week and finish the season 10-2, their resume would still be stronger than Alabama's. Like, their resume would – both of those teams are inactive this week.
If they could do that.
If they could do that.
That's the thing. Now, I thought Rhett Lashley brought up a great way of doing it. The only way that I think you could do it, but I think you'd need some proof that there was COVID on the team and that you wouldn't be able to compete.
That's what
Rhett brought up.
Now, that to me though, that's that's not the same thing, because that would jeopardize your team's availability for the first round playoff game. That's not a forfeit. That's a health related thing.
That's right.
That's like saying, you know, we have a rash of injuries this week, so we're not going to play the ACC championship game. That doesn't tell the playoff committee we're going to be this team in the college football playoff in 2 weeks. If you miss it for health reasons,
yeah. Yeah, but you can't.
Now, if you just forfeited,
well, the thing is, all right, I heard Greg Sankey say this yesterday, and I was looking up the ACC rules. You can't do that. you can't just not play in a game.
So what if SMU,
that you have qualified?
What
for?
If they didn't show up tomorrow?
Then they forfeit. They forfeit, and their season's done.
Now Now I wonder what rule is being cited for a team that doesn't show up for their conference championship game is then ineligible postseason. Now, if there's a rule,
that's what I'm saying. If a team doesn't show for a championship game, they are ineligible for any further participation that year.
In order to protect their conference championship games, conferences probably would need to implement a rule like that.
I think most conferences have something like that.
If you were to volunteer, although in the ACC, it'd be funny because, like, That would be better for the ACC because if it worked and SMU were able to use that to get into the college football playoff as a 10-2 at large, that would put the ACC with two teams in. Well, if the ACC plays this game tomorrow, they have an excellent chance of only getting one team into the college football playoff. So, I mean, it's almost as though the ACC would be...
Well, it would be better for just about any conference that has a team that is on the edge, a team that is barely in. Any conference that had a team barely in that was playing in a conference championship game would be better served not to have that conference championship.
Right. And if you had, like, the Big 12 needs to have its conference championship game because presumably there wouldn't be a Big 12 team in the playoff.
That's the only way they're getting a team in.
Yeah, like the ACC doesn't necessarily need, but if there are rules in place.
And you're not going to see leagues going, well, we'll wait till the end of the year to see if we're going to play a conference championship game. We need a team in, so we'll play one.
And these conference championship games are cash cows for the conference.
Absolutely.
These are the games they own before they kick things over to the college football playoff. But it is interesting how these discussions can come up.
There'll be much more discussions after tomorrow. I mean, the screams will get louder and louder. Miami's already hollering, but that doesn't have anything to do with championship games.
No, and I mean, SMU would have a legitimate beef if they were to lose tomorrow and drop behind teams that were inactive.
Yes, especially since Ward Manuel and the committee had said earlier this year that they weren't expecting to penalize a team for losing in the conference championship game, then turn around Monday or Tuesday and said something completely different.
Sure, and now I think folks expect an inactive SEC team, Alabama, to leap SMU if they were to lose to Clemson tomorrow.
What you would love to know is if they weren't Alabama, would they have moved into the top 12?
Yeah, I mean, if it were a different 9-3 SEC team, if it were South Carolina or Ole Miss, my inclination is yes, because ESPN has a lot tied to the SEC right now. I think
doesn't tell me that they deserve it. That just tells you that ESPN has that pull and they want their teams in.
It would also suggest, I mean, I guess the argument for the 9-3 SEC team is that they've played a tougher schedule than these 10-2 ACC teams. Right?
I guess.
Miami is 0-1 against the current, or they 0-2 against the current playoff top 25. Like, I don't know exactly, but Miami, mm-hmm. Miami's best win of the season might be Florida. Like, I mean,
who beat Ole Miss?
Who beat Ole Miss? But also went 4-4 in the SEC.
I know. But I mean, the thing is, when you get into the head to head, when you played those teams, makes all the difference in the world. So I don't like the head to head stuff as much unless it's just two teams and it's themselves, not two teams and other teams that they play.
Well, when you're talking about South Carolina, that's when the head-to-head hurts, right?
Yes.
Because talking about moving South Carolina ahead of a team with the same record that beat
it
them.
It does, but watching, I mean, you want to get into the other thing they like to talk about, the eye test, the way Alabama played down the stretch, the way South Carolina played down the stretch, who would you take in a neutral site?
Oh, and Ole Miss gets in this conversation, too. And if you want to say, well, I mean, South Carolina had the best November of those three teams. Like, these things are being considered, although it would based on the playoff rankings we got on Tuesday, it feels like Alabama's
the
day.
Look, everybody knows Alabama's in. I mean, unless something crazy happens, Alabama's going to be in. They generally are. If there's a way to get them in, they're in. So I mean,
people ought to be used to it now. But if there was a team I looked at and I said based on merit they should be in ahead of Alabama, if I felt that way about Miami or South Carolina,
I'd love to see Miami and Alabama play.
Yeah,
Cam Ward would put up some serious points and yards on Alabama.
Like if it felt like a robbery, I'd probably be more upset about it. I think that it's close enough that even though Alabama has the bad loss to Oklahoma in November and you thought maybe the committee would factor.
Yeah, they have the worst loss coming down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, but I wonder if
that
if
doesn't matter in football, I
well,
guess.
Well, what they did to get to the nine.
Or if you're going to lose early. Now it doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, I guess because of what they did to get to the nine wins, right? The win over Georgia, the win over South Carolina. Like, they have better wins than some of the other teams in the top 15. I think that's what the committee is basing a decision on. The committee
will just do whatever, and they're in there. I'm tired of talking about it. We'll watch them tomorrow night. There's other things I want to talk about today. We'll talk a little basketball. I want to talk some more transfer portal and the way the Auburn roster looks right now. We've got some guests joining us today. Barrett Salee will be with us here in just a few minutes, as he usually is on Fridays. And since we had a shortened show yesterday, we didn't get a chance to get our Tiger takes with Dylan Cardwell. We'll run that here this hour. you know, at the bottom of the hour or so. And then in hour number two, our other regular Thursday guest, David Paschal from Chattanooga, he will join us. He's having to stay on. He said they're down one person for the show following his. His show ends at 5 o'clock our time, but he's got to stick around for a segment or so there. So we'll get him on around 5:25, 5:30.
And he's going to be covering Texas, Georgia tomorrow, and we'll see who wins the SEC from those two teams, and is likely the one or the two, depending on what happens in the Big Ten championship game. Loser of that game probably drops to what, 5, 6, something like that, and you'll still hosts a game.
Yeah, it depends on which one loses. I mean, Georgia's 4 now, right? It's Texas 2 and Georgia 4.
Yeah, I wonder how far you drop.
So Georgia may drop to 6. Texas would probably drop to 5.
Loser of the Big Ten championship game, loser of the SEC championship game still seem like...
They'll be top 8.
Two of the four teams that will get to host playoff games in a couple of weeks in the first round.
It looks like it will be the loser of the Big Ten, loser of the SEC, Notre Dame...
Ohio State. Ahead of Tennessee would be your
four most likely host teams.
Tennessee looking like the likely 9.
Yeah, Tennessee's 7 now, but they're going to drop because of the automatic bids coming for the Big 12 and the ACC.
Yeah, Tennessee looking like they'll be the top team on the road, and then you get into I guess you have Boise in the Big 12 champion. Could, you know, one of those teams will be the 4. Mm-hmm. One of those teams will be 9 through 12.
ACC's going to be 3, and either Boise or the Big 12 champ will be 4.
Indiana is in that mix. Indiana is one of the last four in.
Indiana will be one of the teams on the road.
Yeah, as will most likely Alabama, as we were just talking about.
All right. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline. Love for you to join in here on this Friday. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise? Let's see. Auburn with a couple of players entering the portal since we exited the show yesterday. Defensive lineman T.J. Lindsey, there'd been some talk about that, and there's some Auburn people like, how could this be going on? Well, it goes on everywhere. What's been going on? I saw a question on a message board before the Alabama game, wondering about T.J. Lindsey to Arkansas, saying that the word there in the state of Arkansas, there was a lot of talk in Arkansas that T.J. Lindsey and his high school coach in Arkansas had been talking about him going to Arkansas. That's one of the ways things get done. T.J. redshirted this past year, didn't play. It is a position. Even though Auburn signed 4 interior defensive linemen, they're thin.
Yeah.
They are thin on the defensive front.
As for Caleb Wooden going in the portal, I mean that's one that I think he was a well liked contributor, and I think people would have
had
loved
an interception against Jaden Milroe in the Alabama game.
Mm-hmm. But you know, Auburn has a pair of young safeties who played very well this year, and Caleb Harris and Sylvester Smith.
So yeah, Sylvester's more of a nickel. So I mean,
Sylvester played a lot of safety too. And then Auburn signed a couple of freshman safeties.
They signed 2 true freshmen. But I mean, they have. The only guy who has played, and he played so well, Caleb Harris is going to be a freshman All-American, but they don't have anybody else who's played any really at safety. Sylvester played more nickel. He played a little safety, but he played more nickel.
So are you going to go with
2 redshirt freshmen and 2 freshmen as your safeties?
Sylvester was playing more nickel after the injuries to Champ and Keontae, right? But he was competing to be a safety. I wouldn't be surprised if he's a safety when they have other pieces in the front when Champ's back and you've got other
maybe.
Like I think I don't know if you're set with Sylvester Smith and Caleb Harris, but I think those are 2 guys that I imagine are like right now. I would think those are your 2.
Right now, they got to be the first guy. Yeah, first guy on my depth chart, as a matter of fact. But I think you have to go out and get a safety now in the portal. You have to get an interior defensive lineman in the portal.
Yeah, I agree. Can't have enough D linemen. We talk about it all the time, and you hate to see a young man leave, especially after redshirting. But you know, like you said, Bill, there's so many things behind the scenes that we don't know is going on between agents and high school coaches and relatives and this guy, my neighbor. I mean, it's crazy. Coach, you don't know who's getting in touch with these people.
How important is it to have experience at the safety position? That's one that we've talked about before. You hear about quarterbacks of the defense.
Yeah, that's a very important position to have experience. I always think of the safety's kind of the leader of the secondary, you know, get people lined up. You got to be a great run stopper. You got to be able to cover. You got to be able to fill. Very important.
I'm wondering, as I look at the Auburn roster right now, who is your nose? Bobby Jamison, Travis?
I mean, are Malik and Jamison Travis, they're both miscast in
Malik,
that.
Malik's 280 something, you know, I mean.
But those are your only two interior D linemen who have eligibility played. Remaining who have played.
Who have played. That's what I'm saying. Auburn really, really needs to find.
A big guy.
Yes.
A big man.
A plug.
A 300-pounder.
Yeah, I wonder if it's easier to recruit in the portal at a position when you have a glaring need, right? We've talked about how when Auburn has a starter.
I would think so. Especially if it looks like you have other pieces on that side of the ball.
And a chance to be a good football team.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there are probably some teams that have a glaring need.
That's
and
terrible.
Guys in the portal go, your team's not going to be good. I'm going to go there.
Well, when there are 20 glaring needs in the starting lineup,
right?
Then it's a little bit tougher to sign up.
Hey, we need to get to our
– as Coach Malzahn will find out down in Tallahassee. Like, that's
yeah, right.
Story down there.
I don't think the cupboard's completely bare down there. They've had a lot of players leave, but, I mean, they brought in – I mean, anybody that they've recruited – over the last few years has been pretty good. Past year they just tanked.
And I imagine they're going to be extremely busy over the next 6 weeks getting veterans, because it's all hands on deck over the next couple months there in Tallahassee.
All right, we're just underway. Need to get to our first break. We'll check in with Barrett Salee when we come back here on the Friday Drive.
Hey, this is Kevin Tutope, owner of the UPS store at Auburn Bank. I want to welcome all
Drive here on this Friday. Bill, Dan, Coach Don Dunn here in the studio. We're going to head to the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. Welcome in our regular Friday afternoon guest at this time, and that is Barrett Salee from Outkick, from College Football Smothered and Covered, and SiriusXM. Barrett, how you doing today, man?
I'm great. Just getting ready for what my opinion, the best event of the college football season in the SEC championship game.
You're talking. Oh, I thought you meant the Dr. Pepper halftime.
Well, that too.
Throw through the bottles.
The chest toss. Uh-huh. Be fired and jailed.
Yeah, you should have to bring the football, hold the football on the laces, and throw it.
It's like Fred Armisen in Parks and Rec, right? Straight to jail. No trial.
Exactly.
Well, last week, if I'm not mistaken, you were there. We were talking about the Auburn 4 overtime game. You were there for that 8 overtime wild one between Georgia and Georgia Tech. And we talked about it a little bit after that on Monday. I'd love to get your thoughts. What are your thoughts now on college football's overtime procedure?
You know, I don't hate it. I mean, I know it's easy to just crap all over it. I don't hate it. I think it was a little bit it was a knee-jerk reaction to that 7 overtime game. And, you know, they didn't really have to change it. You know, I think it would have been easy just to say, all right, look, let's just go. You have to go for 2 every overtime. Like, you have a drive, and you can't kick an extra point if you score. And you have to go for 2. You can kick a field goal if you want also, but just – keep it the regular overtime, but, you know, just go for 2 every time. It would have ended a lot of games.
Oh, yeah.
And as we saw, I mean, Georgia Tech and Georgia, like, it was comical. In fact, I had we were going back and forth in the sideline because they switched sides every overtime period. And, like, the 6th overtime, I was on the Georgia Tech side, and this I think he's a long snapper, looks over me and goes, "Dang, man, y'all are in better shape than we are." And I was like, "Thanks, man. I appreciate that." And even they found it comical. And Georgia Tech lost, but they still found it laughable. And, you know, you could change it easily and go back to what we had before. And instead of, saying you have to go for 2 after 2 overtimes, just say you have to go for 2 the whole time.
And I like the fact that it's not just a one-play thing either. I mean, I'd rather go ahead and say, yeah, go ahead and let's keep going from the 25. When you score, you go for 2. That'd be much better. It's crazy that you get stats for the first 2 overtimes, then you don't because they're considered 2-point conversions from that point on.
That seems to be a concern that, like, a quarterback could have a 12-touchdown day, right, if you treated every touchdown.
Yeah. Up until then.
If you let possession start at the 2 and you treated them as touchdowns and touchdown catches. Like, you can records
soon,
destroyed.
Guys, coaches are going to start realizing if you're the home team or if you're the team that goes in the bottom of the first overtime, you go for two regardless. Like, if you're going to do it anyway at some point,
yes,
just get it out of the way.
Go ahead.
If you win, you win. If you lose, you lose.
Just seems like some coaches, and I think you're right, but some coaches would rather, like, they don't want to you know, make that
decision. They don't want to lose the game.
Yes,
there. They're more worried about losing the game than they are winning the game. Yeah, here's my other thing, Barrett. In the regular season, I say go back to ties. Why not? I mean, that way you wouldn't have to worry about as many tiebreaker concerns as we were talking about, you know, coming down the stretch of the season. So if you tie, in the regular season.
I didn't hate ties. I really didn't. Mm-hmm. I'm not the commissioner of college football, so what do I know?
Well, one of the things we were just talking about with championship Saturday tomorrow, there's really not a lot. It's the pride and winning your conference and everything, but most of these, the ACC is the only one that really matters tomorrow as far as the playoffs are concerned.
I mean, the Big 12 matters because one of those teams is out.
But the ACC. Yeah,
well. Yeah, you know, I think that's – you're right. I mean, the Big 12 is going to be awesome. I can't wait to watch that game. The SMU thing, if SMU loses, it becomes an Alabama-SMU debate, which, I mean, I don't know why Ward Manuel said they locked everybody in last week and that the teams that don't play don't have any more data points. And I'm like, yeah, they do. But, you know, whatever. What do I know? But so that's the only real intrigue, as long as the committee, sticks with its party line from Tuesday, which I think Ward Manuel misspoke and dug himself into a hole. But he's dug himself into a hole at this point, so
yes,
it doesn't really matter. But yeah, I mean, it becomes an SMU-Alabama conversation if SMU loses. Personally, I don't think they're going to punish SMU for playing their way into another loss, especially considering they ran the table in the ACC, and their only loss in a regular season was to BYU, which I think was 17th last week. So that would be the only debate, although I do think tonight is going to be interesting because I think UNLV is going to beat Boise State. Mm, and so then you would have, in theory, the Big 12 champion moving up to that 4 spot and UNLV sliding in at that 12 spot. So there's a little bit of intrigue left, but some of that will be resolved, like I said, tonight with what happens in the Mountain West Championship.
Yeah, speaking of the Big 12, I saw the graphic this week that Arizona State had been picked last in the Big 12 preseason media poll. And it's actually pretty astonishing, right? Like three of the top five in the preseason media poll are three of the bottom four in the actual league poll. Oklahoma State went 0-9 in Big 12
play. They might fire their coach today.
That was where I was going with this, is what on earth is going up? It sounds like there's a standoff in Stillwater between Mike Gundy, whether or not he's going to take less money or take his buyout and leave town.
I mean, like, the standoff thing is so apropos because it's like, how else would you describe it? It's exactly what's happening. It's it's hilarious and very Oklahoma State. And look, if I'm Mike Gundy, I dig my heels in too and say, look, if y'all want to fire me, fire me. Because, I mean, they're going to try to fire him with cause. And it's like, you're going to lose that lawsuit, Oklahoma State. Like, that's airtight. You're going to lose it based on what you've said now. So,
what's the cause?
Yeah, I
can't wait.
Because they don't want him to be the coach anymore?
Because we suck.
Mike Gundy will be like, shoot, I'm out. I'll take my money. You know, you give me my buyout, I'm out later, you know?
Yeah, no, it's wild to think for one of the coaches who's, I mean, he's one of the deans of major conference college football.
20 years.
Well, and they're not going to get anybody better. They're not.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, although Belichick's hearing offers, what on earth is
that?
That's
mind blowing.
The story here that I guess, I don't know if it's a rumor or not, I want to ask Barrett, that reportedly one of Belichick's terms for UNC is that he would want his son named head coach in waiting. He would want.
That's probably the whole reason for him being interested in the job.
Yeah,
you know, you're always wanting to take care of your kids.
God, that's not going to work. I personally like the idea of Bill Belichick trying to deal with NIL and transfer portal and high school recruiting. Mm-hmm. That's funny to me. It's comedy. But here's the thing too.
Yeah, next up at ACC Media Days, we got Justin Wilcox and Bill Belichick.
Yeah. Right. It's funny. I heard a story about a coach that You know, they had those exit interviews every single, after every single season. And the first player he talked to was a kicker, and the kicker asked for $500,000. And I'm like, dude, Bill Belichick would murder that kicker if he asked for $500,000.
Yeah, you're better off with a weapon. You're going to make a request like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Next time.
Just bring a machete into the meeting.
Hey, what a fun time it is in college football because the signing period, the early signing period is wrapping up, and the portal opens on Monday, even though an awful lot of players have already let it be known that they're jumping in.
Yeah, and, you know, think about that. Like, all these coaches, even the ones in championship games, have to deal with their players leaving now, right? Like, there's Texas players and that have already jumped in. There are other, you know, teams there's a Georgia players that have popped in. It's like, wow, this is, you know, last year, the one that we talked about was Malik Murphy, right? Leaving Texas in the playoff run, and he was their backup. But we knew, like, hey, he had to make that decision. The calendar is just set up that way. If he wants to go be a starting quarterback somewhere, he's got to bail during a playoff run. Now you have players bailing before championship week. you know, it goes to show how screwed up our calendar actually is.
Well, I mean, it appears that you know, a lot of coaches are glad at least that the signing period was a little earlier this year. At least you don't have that involved with, you know, bowl prep or playoff prep and the portal.
Yeah, I mean, and look, if the calendar is gonna be complicated and suck, you might as well just have, like, this year's fine. Like, get one of the things that complicates it out of the way, right? And that's essentially what happened, is that they got National Signing Day out of the way. A lot of these kids already knew where they were going anyway. There's no reason to extend it till whatever, the 17th or 19th or whatever it was in years past. So, you're not going to make it perfect, so you might as well make, like, 1 week super chaotic instead of three, which is essentially what they've done.
Barrett, was there anything that really jumped out at you from the signing period?
Not really. I mean, not really at all. I think that, you know, Auburn finished the way I think we thought Auburn would with the top 10 class. You know, there weren't massive flips or anything like that. You know, there was obviously, you know, the Deuce Knight thing was big for Auburn, getting him from Notre Dame a month ago they got him. So, you know, nothing really that surprising. Maybe Justice Terry today, but
yeah,
overall it was kind of what was expected.
Yeah, it really was. It seemed, you know, less, there were fewer last second flips and things like that than we usually see. So,
well, and you know, I was thinking about this, you know, you guys, you know, are old like me. I mean, we remember, like, building up to the first Wednesday of February and players who don't go on visits or get snowed out of visits or whatever, you know. Now I think the high school National Signing Day is like, oh yeah, your class looks good. And then next year it could be completely different. Like, the whole class could be gone, you know, so it's not as big of a deal now, is because, you know, if some of these, well, Texas A&M's great class from 2 years ago, I think only like 10 of those guys are still there.
Yeah, you thought most of those guys, you know, the ones who qualified academically and got into school.
You don't even hear any concerns with that anymore.
No, but the ones who did, you know, those guys would, most of the time, they'd still be there 2 years later.
Oh, yeah,
yeah,
and
exactly.
There's no guarantee.
No,
of that.
Now it's, no, hey, you've got anymore. Them first. That's pretty much, that's the only guarantee, is
exactly.
You got them first.
We're all day to day.
Yep. Barrett, great stuff as always. What you got going on this weekend?
Yeah, I'll be down at the SEC Championship game. We'll have coverage for the podcast, College Football Smothered and Covered, after that game, and certainly late night wrapping up everything. And we'll have picks, predictions, columns, everything before and after Selection Sunday on Outkick. So we'll be busy, man. It's a busy couple of days.
All right, Barrett, take care. Thanks again. Have a great weekend.
All right, thanks, y'all.
Barrett Salee joining us as he does on Fridays. You want to get to Dan? He's been hanging on the whole Pat. Is it Pat? Let's get to Pat. He's been hanging on for a long time. We'll get to him before we get to break. Hey, Pat.
Hey, guys.
What's going on?
Not much. I was sent Dan a pic of the play in the basketball game where it was basket interference, and they took they said no basket. The refs said no basket, and then they went to the commercial break, and when it came back, when it left, it was 61, and when it came back, it was 63, and you saw you saw the Cooper guy, you know, do the swirl with his finger to I guess it was Denver, because Denver was looking at him like, what's going on? And I guess they added the basket back. And so I went back and watched it, and it was clearly over the cylinder.
Oh, yeah, I did not. Now, I did not realize that they gave him those 2 points back, because when they said basket interference, I was watching and I went, yeah, it was. So I didn't even think about that.
And both of the announcers said, yeah, Jay Billis, he said, oh, that's clearly in the cylinder.
Yes.
So I don't understand how they go back during a timeout. They look at that video, and then if you look at the pick I sent Dan, I don't see how in the world they could possibly say that that's not in the cylinder.
Yes, I mean, my understanding of the rule is that, you know, if any part of the ball, right, is still over the cylinder. Now, I mean, now the Duke, like the – now, based on the – I got to watch the video again, Pat, because based on the pick you sent me, I don't know when the Duke player, you know, is he about to touch it? Has he already touched it?
No,
you know
that's that's the furthest it gets off the rim. At the next pick, the next little millisecond, it's going towards the basket.
But in three, I mean, there were like three basket interference calls in that game, and at least two of them got reviewed. And yeah, the one in the second half was one where I was surprised to see extra points added I'd be curious to know an explanation as to why that was not considered basket interference.
Yeah, well, and I mean, I know Bruce never talked about that, but I mean, the first one was almost as bad. It still was on the rim by about 2.5 inches, but it still was. But they went and reviewed it, and it was close enough, I guess, where you could say, okay, we're not going to overturn it. But I don't see how, when it's called on the court, that's no basket, that you can go back and look at that right there, and you can honestly say that you can overturn that. I don't understand how that could possibly happen. And it just doesn't seem like that should be allowed to happen. It's not like it's a close call. It's like it was called no basket.
Well, things get called that you can look back and see shouldn't have been called all the time, Pat. I mean, it's how it gets called is because they're humans.
I can understand when it's like, oh, you can't, it's not enough information. I'm saying it was called that way, and there's clearly no way you could say that was not over the thing. So I just don't understand
it's one thing if they get it wrong in real time, right? The idea that it was reviewed that's a little bit puzzling. And I mean, I guess it's, I mean, you're like you said, you're talking about millimeters, right? You're talking about a very close, but at the same time, it does seem based on the video evidence that the ball.
I can understand, but talk to other ACC teams that have been at a Cameron, and they'll tell you how that could get called.
Well, it just seems like that's just corruption right there. That's not a bad call. That's you went back and overturned without evidence that completely, and everybody said it. Oh, Jay Billis. Oh, that's clearly basket interference. No basket. And they took it off. And so it was like there was no question by anybody's mind that it was not a basket. And then you look at the video, and then they went back and looked at that video and that, and then they said add more points. Like that to me is just pure corruption. That's not oh well we'll let it stand or we won't overturn it. You know, I can understand not overturning it. I don't understand how you can add points that were never given on the court. And the video evidence does not allow it. I don't see how that just seems to me one that nobody's talking about it. And to me, that,
no, you're right. You're right. There aren't many people talking about it, but it happened.
Well, that 2 points would have mattered at the end of the game.
Yeah, it very well could have. Very well could have.
Yep. All right. Thanks, guys. Warrior.
We need to get to our. We're way behind. Got to get to our bottom of the hour break. Stick with us here on the Friday Drive.
Hey, this is Kevin Tutup, owner of the
7502, or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Friday afternoon. Bill Dan, Coach Don Dunn here in the studio. All right, I was just looking at that video. Like I said, the other night when the game was going on, I remember that play and I remember them saying that's basket interference. And then I recall looking up and thinking, well, I missed a basket. I did not realize they had given the points back. But
yeah, the sequence we're talking about.
Pat, as we look at the video.
And to tell people when it is. So this is with 11:16 left in the second half.
Auburn trails Duke 58-54, and there's a sequence where Duke misses a shot, like a baseline jumper, and then there's a Duke player, and I think it's Malowak, and Miles Kelly and Chaney Johnson all under the basket trying to get the rebound. The Duke player, there's contact with the ball at the cylinder, and the ball goes back in. It's originally called no basket, and then they looked at it during the commercial break and decided to count the basket. We were looking at it, trying to figure out why that would be, because the ball does appear to be on the rim.
Yes, but what I see is, I also see, I think it's Miles, one of the Auburn players' hand at least grazes and looks like it may have held onto the rim. You do that while the ball's up there, that's goaltending.
And that would be, so the only logic, because that's
very well how they could have awarded 2 points.
I would agree that the ball appears to be in the cylinder. What's less clear on the replay is whether or not there is an Auburn player making contact with the ball or the rim while the ball is in the cylinder. Because it's not just the Duke player going for the tip. You've also got an Auburn player, at least one Auburn player. I think it's Chaney and Miles, because Chaney's arm is in the shot, but he's not really in the shot.
I think it's Miles' hand.
And Miles is the one, right next to the Duke player. So maybe it's an Auburn player, or it's at least less conclusive on the video evidence, and that was the decision to make it. But I would not dispute. The ball appears to be in the cylinder the whole time.
Oh, yes. I agree with that 100%.
What's less clear is whether or not it's the Duke player exclusively doing the interfering, which would make it a more complicated call-in video.
Auburn back in action Sunday morning, an 11 o'clock tip against the Richmond Spiders over at the arena. So
it's a Richmond Spiders team that won the A-10 last year, but they've really struggled.
They're 4-4, I think.
Yeah, they've struggled the first month of the season. Offense has just been an issue. It's a new look roster. They got a coach. He's been there 20 years. He's been to the Sweet 16 with the Spiders. A couple of years ago. So I mean, it's a good mid major opponent to bring in. I would expect Auburn to be a cut or two above this Richmond team. But it's a quality mid-major to bring into your building, especially after Auburn's played five quad one games away from home,
right,
to start this season in their first month. So yeah, I think a visit from a team like Richmond at home Sunday morning, doubleheader.
That's right. The women to follow,
and the Christmas parade going on Sunday as well. It's a busy day on the last Sunday, really the last Sunday of the semester in Auburn, right? I mean, because the finals,
Are next week, and the graduation is next weekend. So most everybody be gone. I saw somebody going, oh, this is going to be great. I can sit anywhere, right? Because the students are gone. It's like, no, they're not gone.
Not quite.
No. They're not gone. Classes are done, but finals aren't done. So, I mean, some students may be gone, but no, I would expect there to be a pretty good representation there in the jungle on Sunday. All right, let's get to our final break of hour number one. We'll get caught back up. And we'll open up the phone lines.
Want to mention that we're going to play some audio from our buddy Dylan Cardwell.
Right, we've got Tiger Takes. We'll run that at the start of hour number two. And then near the bottom of the hour, we'll check in with David Paschal. So we've got a little time when we come back. Come on in and join us. 334-321-1390 here on the Friday Drive.
Hip pain is not to be taken lightly.
Or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Friday. About to be evening. Bill, Dan, and Don. Coach Don Dunn with us here as he is on Fridays. We'd love for you to join in. Give us a call. Anything on your mind sports-wise as we head into championship weekend. By the time we're back on Monday, We will know the college football playoff situation, the bowl games. I mean, there's an awful lot that is going on this weekend, going to be determined this weekend.
Doesn't look like there will be 5-7 teams included in the bowl picture this year. Enough teams got to 6-6, and so they're not going to have to fill out space. Yeah. I wonder, this is the first bowl season in the expanded college football playoff era. And I wonder how much attention the non-playoff bowls will receive in a season like this, right? I mean, it was one thing when we were playing.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's one thing when we were talking about like a two-team playoff or a four-team playoff.
Yeah.
When you're taking the top 12.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of,
My guess would be
that a lot of the bowl pools that people used to do, the confidence picks and the bowl, I wonder if that's going to be replaced by a college football playoff bracket challenge. I wonder if people are going to start filling out their brackets like March Madness a little bit, where I know it's not March Madness.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not going to be that one in the Sahara many million chances when you got 12 teams.
But how do you pick bowls with any confidence when the teams are bringing half their players?
Yeah, you don't know who's opting out, who's entering the portal, who's doing what.
I mean, especially if you're going to a cold weather destination.
Or you've had a disappointing season. Yeah, I mean, there's so many things.
Now the coaches love it. The alumni love it, but those players, some of them just don't want to do it.
And I'm of two minds. I'd be interested to know what the coach thinks about this, because I look at it and I think, you know, if you have a bunch of players who aren't coming back next year, who decide to opt out either to get ready for the play, you know, get ready for the draft, or because they know they're going to the portal, mm-hmm. or because they just don't want to, you know, play the game. Like, that hinders you in that game, but it also gives you, like, it also feels like an opportunity to
For the other guys.
To give reps to evaluate some guys. So I've always thought there's, you know, it's a blessing and a curse to have guys opting out, because it does, you know, you don't have them, but you do have your young guys that you can take a closer look at and maybe give some actual reps to on the field.
Yeah, that's something I fortunately never had to worry about, because we all wanted to go. It didn't matter where. Like Bill said, you just got to get your young guys, and whoever you got, you go to war with them. But it's tough.
Yeah, you might have had guys who wanted to go too much to the bowl games more than guys who wanted to.
That's right. They liked that 4 or 5 days where they didn't have any curfew and stuff.
I mean, you remember Auburn last year. Were there 3 scholarship receivers for Auburn in the bowl game against Maryland?
That showed.
You can't tell that sob story, because that's everybody in college football now when they're talking about
their bowls. It's just as likely to be everybody. I mean, what's the exception is a team that has most of its players who played.
Right.
I mean, and that could happen. You never know in these bowl games. Yeah, but Auburn's not going to be concerned with that. They're 5-7, and as you said, there are enough 6-6 teams. They've got plenty to be concerned with right now. They've had a couple of players go on the portal since yesterday.
The portal
doesn't even open until Monday.
You think Hugh Freeze is that broken up, though? I mean, I'm sure he'd like to have won 6 games. Like, there's no question in my mind. Like, Hugh Freeze did not want to go 5-7 this year. But I think
you know how many losing seasons he's ever had? Two.
I mean,
you know how many the last two.
But I do wonder if you're not in the playoff. I wonder if you gave a coach an injection of, like, truth serum, and you're like, all right, tell the truth here, coach. Would you rather be spending this month getting ready for a bowl game that's not a playoff game? You know, you're getting ready to play in Shreveport, or would you like to spend this month recruiting your roster and re-recruiting your in-home guys and going out and getting your portal targets as best you can? Because I feel like it's an opportunity. Being home this month is an opportunity for some coaches that other coaches don't get, because they're getting ready to play at least one, a postseason game.
Yeah, as a coach, I want to practice and I want to go to a bowl. And again, it's different now from when I coached. We didn't have to worry about the portal and re-recruiting our own people and worrying about who's going to be here. But as a coach, you want the practice days. I know that sounds like coach speak, but it is. You get 15 extra days of practice almost. You have them when there's no school. It's all football. You get to use your young kids. You keep the young kids after practice, scrimmage them for, 30, 40 plays. It's just positive all the way around. Now, some of the guys don't want to be there. I realize that. And again, it's the bowl you're in, the climate, all kinds of, things that lead into that. But as a coach, I want to go to a bowl.
Let me correct myself too. Hugh Freeze, as soon as I said it, I went, his last year at Ole Miss, he was 5-7. So, but anyway, still, I mean,
not many
coaches don't want to have, they don't want to have losing records for multiple reasons. No. But
you don't get to have too many of them.
No, you're right. But there is plenty to be concerned with right now. Trying to now fill in the holes that are left on the roster after signing day and from here in the portal, as we were talking about a while ago, no question they need a safety. They need an interior defensive lineman. Yep. Those have been the last two things that have gone in the portal. No question they need a quarterback. Sometime, I mean, I don't know if we'll have time today, but I've got a tentative depth chart already for next year with the players that have signed and are left, and there are some obvious places where you look and you go, oh, that's not enough.
And it would be if
not enough experience.
If Auburn looked at their current options at tackle, right? If they said, like, all right, Dylan and Tyler, you know, or something like that can be our starting tackles, and we can go, like, I think it would lighten the load of what you need to go get in the portal. I don't think Auburn's going to do that. Like, I think Auburn's looking at left tackle as one of the spots where they want to be in on, you know, and anybody who could potentially start at Auburn who goes into the portal at that position. And yeah, I mean, you mentioned quarterback has been, like, for months, folks have, I mean, for over a year, people have talked about, you know, whether, regardless of how Peyton plays this season, you were probably going to be shopping for his replacement in the portal, and sure enough, here you are doing exactly that.
Yep. And probably a running back too, right, Bill?
Yeah, I agree. We need to get to our top of the hour break. Halfway done, we're going to have Tiger Takes when we come back. But we'll love to hear from you as well. 334-321-1390. Join us here on the Friday Drive.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two here on the Friday Drive. Bill, Dan, Coach Don Dunn here in the studio. And we hope everybody doing well, getting ready for a big weekend. It is conference championship weekend, Auburn basketball with a home game. Got the Auburn Christmas Parade coming up on Sunday. And if you can't make it to the parade, you can go to the Wings Facebook page, Wings 94.3 Facebook page. And they'll have coverage.
Yeah, I bet.
Ben and Jacob going to be over there.
It's going to be like when Regis and Kathy Lee used to do, you know, the coverage of the parades. I love parade coverage. I can't wait. Yeah. So yeah, Jacob and Ben will take you through the festivities. Always a fun time. The downtown Christmas parade.
Oh yeah. We're really excited because I got to say this right, because I started to say we're excited because Matt and Ariel are not around.
Not going to be there. Yeah.
Matt will be coming back from a bachelor party, I think up in Nashville, and Ariel's got some camera work to do. So we've got Kennedy, and looking forward to having Kennedy over at the parade.
Oh, she's going to have a blast at the Christmas parade. She's at an age now where it's all going to be very magical.
Aubie and Santa in the same, you know, in the same setting.
It's bigger than going to the Beatles at Shea Stadium.
You're absolutely right about that for her.
I mean, she's going to get to see Aubie and Santa at the same spot, and Grandpa and Grandma are going to be there too. So it'll be
60. I'm granddad. I'm not grandpa.
Oh, are you granddad? Yeah. Okay.
It's going to be 61, so that's not bad.
No, it's going to be nice. Maybe a little cloudy, but I mean, no chance of rain. I think until
Monday,
maybe Sunday night. But it looks fine for that. All right, it is hour number two of The Drive, and the second hour of the show brought to you as usual by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika. And if you'd like to join in, you can call us on The Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number's 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcast. Just search for The Drive with Bill Cameron on your favorite podcasting platform, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center. Big shout out to our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
All right, now we normally have Tiger Takes on Thursdays with Dylan Cardwell, but yesterday we had an abbreviated edition of the show because of Auburn women's basketball, who came through winners again last night. So we have Tiger Takes for you here on this Friday evening, brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. Visit them today at 217 North College Street, or book online at 12ksalon.net. Once again, Jacob Goins was able to spend some time with Auburn senior center Dylan Cardwell.
Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7 Auburn Opelika Sports Leader as we sit down for our weekly segment of Tiger Takes. It's brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. You can make your next reservation online at 12ksalon.net. And as we are in full basketball season mode now, we sit down with Auburn center Dylan Cardwell. Dylan, what's up, my man? How are you doing, man? December is rocking and rolling, and non-conference play got you guys going everywhere.
Yes, sir. What's going on?
Well, man, we are just excited to talk to you once again and have you a part of Tiger Takes here on ESPN 106.7. And I know that Wednesday night was a tough result against Duke and Cameron Indoor. We're going to get to that in just a little bit. But we need to flash back because it's been a couple of weeks since we've talked to you with the Thanksgiving holiday. And you guys were, you know, riding waves in Maui and winning championships and doing big, big things. And so summarize what Maui was for you, man. I mean, that was such a great trip, and Auburn fans stayed up late a couple of times, but got to see you guys win it all.
Yeah, you know, Maui was a dream come true. You know, my mom, the other one on the bucket list to be able to go to Hawaii, and she was able to go to Hawaii, not only, you know, for vacation, but to see her son play basketball. And so, you know, for me, it was just a huge, you know, opportunity to put on national TV, but also play in a dreamy kind of island. It was like the best of both worlds, you know, vacation and basketball.
Well, how was it for, I guess, so that's cool that your family got to go. I don't know if you told us that or not, that they were getting to go with you. And so were you able to spend a little time with them off the floor?
Yeah, I was. We were able to spend Thanksgiving together and hang out and just have a good time, which we don't usually get to do. And so this was like just, you know, refreshing to be able to do.
And I know these types of trips are really important, yes, for winning big games and getting better as a team during the 40 minutes, but I know these are really good bonding moments off the floor with team activities, and there were so many videos and pictures of you guys out rowing and doing all sorts of stuff. What'd you guys get into?
We did a luau. We went rowing. Then we kind of just practiced. We tried to shut it down, you know, 2 days before.
Sure. Sure.
So it was a lot of, you know, just hanging out at the beach and just, you know, hanging out. That's really it.
Yeah, I think the weather's pretty nice down there, even though it's November and cold here in Auburn. But, man, it seems to be pretty nice down in Maui. And it's nice when you're winning games against big-time teams. Man, you guys lit it up in Maui. You started in the first game on that Monday against Iowa State, a top-five matchup where you were down, you and your team were down by 18 at one point, and you come all the way back to win that one, 83-81. I know it's been a little bit, but can you flash back and tell us what that game was like to come back and win game one?
Yeah, that game was really insane. I mean, you know, we started out, I thought, you know, we started out good in the first, you know, 2-3 minutes. And then out of nowhere, you know, we just kind of stopped playing Auburn basketball. We stopped guarding, we stopped running plays. And, you know, Iowa State was just more physical and they were defending at a very high level. And then, you know, we go in the half down 15. They're making shots. They're guarding really well. And we kind of just bought in the locker room, like, hey, like, let's just chip away at this lead and see if we can get it, you know, to single digits before the 10-minute mark. And, you know, lo and behold, we did. We started with our defense because we just knew we weren't guarding the first half because they scored 49 points. And so we knew what we had to do.
And then it was your boy Janai who got the tip in right there at the end to give you guys an 83-81 win. I know you and him are tight, and I know you are just you're big cheerleaders of each other. I know that was cool to see him do that.
Yeah, I mean, that was my dog. And thank God he made it because, you know, it was kind of like reminiscent of, you know, that Yale game. We had a couple tip-ins that we missed. And both the games ended with Janai on the floor. And so it was fun. This one was actually, you know, in a win. And, you know, just, you know, all glory to God that he allowed us to win that game because, you know, that was a very tough, you know, tournament. You lose that game, you turn around, you play a really good Dayton team. And if you lose that Dayton game, you turn around and play a really good UConn team. So it's just like, you know, that tournament was really tough.
Yeah, I mean, there was no easy games. There's no easy outs there. And your reward for winning Iowa State was another top 15 team when you played North Carolina the very next day. And you guys put that one away, 85-72. I don't know how you guys felt, but the final score doesn't really tell the whole story of that game. I mean, you guys were in command early and pretty much throughout the entire time.
Yeah, you know, that game really, the game we started off insanely hot. I mean, it was just like we just hitting all the shots we wanted to, and we were guarding really well, and they came back and made a run. But you know, I think the ref kind of helped them stay in the game. But other than that, we just kind of, they were a good UNC team, good North Carolina team, but I mean, I just think our depth is really hard to, you know, stay in front of, especially when you're the best, you know, front court in the country.
And Auburn continues their success against North Carolina. I know what you know what I'm talking about there, but I want to get to the championship game against Memphis. Auburn, you guys win 90-76 as we sit down with Auburn Basketball Center Dylan Cardwell for Tiger Takes here on ESPN 106.7. Dylan, my man, you had a career day against Memphis. 90-76 final score. You went for 18 points. You didn't miss a shot, my friend. 8 for 8 from the floor. You even knocked down one from downtown. I know BP had something to say about that. Walk us through it, my man. That was a heck of a performance.
Yeah, you know, just being ready when your number's called, you know, I've been working on my offensive game all year, but I just play my role. And so this team doesn't really necessarily need me to, you know, shoot the ball if I need to, you know what I'm saying? They don't need me to do my hook shots or anything. They just kind of need me to fill in and play defense and really just get guys open. And so I just so happen to be open a lot.
Because you got open, Dylan. You got open. Come on now. Give yourself some credit.
Yeah, but it was a fun game. I just went to that game, you know, wanted to give my all for God and give my all for Auburn, because at the end of the day, like, this is a championship and this means more. And so just to bring home a Maui championship, it meant a lot to me.
How many threes is that for you in your career? How many? How is it? Two?
Four.
A four? Oh, man. Okay. Okay. I mean, 100% in that game. You can't compete with that.
Yeah, no.
What did Bruce say? Please tell me he had something to say.
I don't think he said anything. I think, I think he just was too busy with the championship. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't really get any.
Yeah. I'm curious. I want to ask because, we say it's a championship, and it is. You got all the hardware. Jani Broome wins the MVP of the Maui. You guys get to bring home Auburn's first ever Maui Invitational Championship trophy. How does it feel to win something like that so early in the season? I mean, do you ride that throughout the year? Do you kind of shrug it off because you know there's more to gain? I mean, what does it feel like to win a championship this early in the year?
Winning Maui means a little bit more than any other championship, like the Romans Classic or anything. Or I just think it, you know, with that field being so tough, it kind of just showed where we are in the country. You know, we're a top three team, and that was a tough competition, and to lock in 3 days straight, it kind of just shows us where we are. I mean, I don't think any of us have like felt that we've arrived, and so I don't think we put too much stock into it, but it was fun to win the championship. I'd rather win it than lose it. So
I'd hope so. I would hope so. Did this give you flashbacks to like AAU basketball, or was this more? I mean, do you compare it to like the SEC championship or the SEC tournament rather, where you just play day after day after day?
I don't know. I think the SEC tournament, for some odd reason, was a more fun AAU type. I think because the stakes were higher.
Sure. Sure.
I don't know. That's a really good question. This really didn't feel like AAU only because we were in paradise. Like, we were just like, you win a game and you just sit on the balcony and look at the sunset, you know?
Yeah.
That's strange.
That's awesome.
For the SEC tournament, like, I don't know why, but because of its competitive nature and SEC and, you know, the chance to win a ring, it was just, I feel like an AAU tournament. I don't know, like, what the difference was. I mean, they're both the same, like, you know, 3 days, three games. But, shoot, that's a really good question.
I mean, it was a lot of fun to watch. And, again, Auburn fans really, really enjoyed it. And the time change, I know, is different. We had to stay up late on this end of the country, man. It was some late nights, but we were willing to do it as you guys go down to win the Maui Invitational. And then I know – it's so tough playing that many games and flying back, and then you just had to turn around and go straight to North Carolina, where Auburn played at Cameron Indoor, and you guys went into one of the most hostile environments in college basketball, one of the cathedrals of college basketball, for yet another top 10 matchup. Before we get to the game in particular, Dylan, what was it like to play a game in there and see the sights?
I mean, it was a dream come true. I mean, Bruce Pearl's like, he wanted that Duke game last year, and we didn't get it. And you know, it just kind of proves we're on top of the SEC, you know, when they're sending us to North, when they're sending us to Duke to play, you know, top, you know, 10 team. So for me, the dream come true just because I grew up a Duke fan. I've always wanted to play for Duke.
Yeah.
And, you know, just being able to share that experience with my family and my mom and my brothers, kind of like a full circle moment. It meant a lot to me.
Was it everything you wanted it to be? Because I remember you telling us that last time we sat down that you were a big Duke fan. Was it everything you thought it would be?
No, yeah, it was a crazy environment. It got really, really loud in there. You know, the fans were pretty intimidating. But it was a fun experience. You know, like I was telling myself, you know, this is literally a once in a lifetime opportunity. I'm never going to play here again.
Literally, yeah.
So it was fun. I really enjoyed it. And I was just grateful for the opportunity. You know, even though it didn't come out how we wanted it to come out, you know, at the end of the day, I'm just grateful to have attended that.
Yeah, let's talk about the result. Auburn, you guys fall the first time this season, 84-78, in a game where you were in it the entire way. You started out hot again, as this team has for most of the year. Duke went on a run, and then it was just trying to climb back the entire way, fighting the fans and the atmosphere, and I'll say it, the officials, and you know, some just criticism that you guys are having to go against, and that's a really good Duke team, man. I thought they matched up really well with us, and so I'm curious on how you think Duke played compared to what you guys maybe didn't do so well.
Oh man, we just didn't guard.
Well,
you let up 84 points. You know, you score 80 points, 78 points on the road. I mean, you're pretty much guaranteed to win, and you know we lost, but we didn't guard. We got our rebound in the first half. And I mean, at the end of the day, they used to hit some tough shots, and then they hit tough shots when they needed them, like the buzzer beater from the dang
yes.
logo. I mean, that's just stuff that you know you just can't make up. And so they hit some, you know, at home shots, and that's what you kind of expect when you're at home. But yeah, I just don't think that mentally we were prepared as a team to be the more physical team.
Yeah, I mean, in a game like this, it's tough because you're so focused on their skill and the atmosphere and the travel and yourselves. It's hard to get up and get ready physically for a team like that. And I hated it for you because you got an early foul trouble. So your presence and your influence on the game wasn't as much as we've seen in all the other games just because you were in foul trouble so early.
Yeah, ACC ref.
careful now, Dylan. Careful now. So let me ask you this then. If for a guy like yourself who does have so much of an impact on this team, and when this team wins, you're a big part of that. How do you help in other ways when you are in foul trouble, when you're on the bench and not being able to play as much as you'd like?
Yeah, I just try to keep everybody level headed, you know, and just be a servant. You know, whether it's helping a manager carry water bottles or get towels for the guys, you know, just serving. That's all I can do, you know. And
yeah.
So just making sure I'm serving these guys and helping these guys, you know, from the perspective, keeping their head up, you know. And if they make a bad play, just be like, hey, man, move on, next play. And if they make a good play, you know, encourage it. And so just being vocal and, you know, just having fun. At the end of the day, like, these are my brothers that are going through it, even though I'm not. Sometimes I'm in foul trouble. I'm having fun because I'm a fan of them. So it was a good time.
Well, the good news is you guys still have 3 top 15 wins, still the best resume in college basketball, a loss to a top 10 Duke team by 6 points on the road. Nobody's gonna discredit you for doing that. And so you look ahead now to what you guys have Sunday morning, 11 a.m. People got to get to the early service of church so they can come check you guys out at Neville Arena. Back home for the first time in what seems like forever, Dylan, playing Richmond. Then you guys go to Atlanta for Ohio State, back home for Georgia State, you play Purdue in Birmingham, and then Monmouth to end the non-conference slate. What's the mindset now moving forward in these next few games?
Man, I'm just thankful we play 11 a.m. You know, playing at 9 p.m. is not fun.
You're tired of the late games, aren't you?
I'm done with them. I can't.
What's your bedtime, man? What time you go to bed?
I try to go to bed like 10:30, you know?
Yeah.
It's just,
yeah.
From my perspective, you know, just sitting in a hotel room all day or sitting in your room all day
right
before a 9 o'clock game is just not fun.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather just, you know, get the game, you know, play the game early, or at least at a reasonable time. But, man, I'm excited for 11 a.m. game this weekend.
And it's back at home. Again, like I said, you guys haven't played at home in nearly a month.
Really?
I think so, yeah. I'm trying to – let me see. Yeah, the last game at home was November 18th against North Alabama, so nearly 3 weeks.
Oh, wow. That's insane.
Yeah. And then and then you're back in Atlanta. So you're, and I know, you know, Atlanta's a great place for you, and I know you're excited to go over there, but you're about to get a week off, too. You play Sunday and then don't play again until Saturday. I know you're looking forward to some downtime.
I enjoy playing. You know, at this point in my career, I'm just like, man, I'm ready to get to the next game, you know.
Yeah.
So – that's why I live about the NBA. It's like, you know, you have one game, you get in foul trouble, and you can play again, you know, in 2 or 3 days. And so I just want to play again. the week off, I mean, it's just like a week off in Auburn when it's like 30 degrees just doesn't sound like fun to me.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, it is getting cold outside. There's no doubt about it. Well, you got a couple of games left in the non-con, and then SEC play will begin. Dylan Cardwell from Auburn Basketball joining us here on ESPN 106.7 for Tiger Takes. Dylan, you're a blast, my man. You're always fun to talk to. We appreciate you taking the time, and War Eagle.
Yes, sir, War Eagle.
Dylan Cardwell, and again, Tiger Takes usually on Thursdays, and our thanks for him joining Jacob for Tiger Takes, which is brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. Call to book your next appointment at 334-209-2900. I was telling Dan and Don that they hadn't heard about an email. If you have not heard this, Jack Winters, the Senior Associate Director for Athletics, right? So your AD sent an email out to all the Duke season ticket holders. I want to read it to you. What a huge win Wednesday night for our Blue Devils in Cameron. Our young team rose to the occasion, displaying incredible grit and tenacity, and came out victorious. I'm reaching out to you as a season ticket holder because in addition to overcoming the Auburn Tigers on the court, our team also had to silence an overly large group of Tiger fans in the stands. The atmosphere we experienced last night is neither typical nor acceptable for Cameron Indoor Stadium. We need the full support of all season ticket holders to ensure this doesn't occur again. I want to remind everyone that reselling Duke Athletics tickets for profit violates Duke's policy. And if you're unable to attend a game and don't have a fellow Duke fan to use your tickets, we encourage you to return them through your Duke Athletics tickets account. By doing so, you'll earn Iron Duke's credit for the face value, and most importantly, will ensure that Duke will have the tickets offered to another Blue Devil fan. So, I mean, it's pretty funny. It goes on and on and on for the full Duke tickets and blah, 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 blah. But how about that?
Yeah.
The Duke AD having to send a ticket out to an email out to season ticket holders because there were too many Auburn people there.
You know what, though? If you're a Duke season ticket holder and the number two team in the country is coming to Cameron Indoor non-conference and you've known about it all season and you're selling your tickets, you know, it's fair to wonder how hardcore of a Duke fan you really are. If you're selling that to that game,
yeah.
Number two Auburn's at Cameron Indoor, and you're gonna put that. So yeah, so I can understand why. Like, I would worry that someone's selling their tickets to that one. I'd wonder if they're just owning their season tickets to scalp. Like, I'd wonder if
they're
just trying to make money.
If they find that out, that does violate their policy, selling them for profit. But but I thought that was cool. All right,
you think those Auburn fans paid face?
No, I don't think so. All right, we'll get to our first break. We're going to check in with David Paschal when we come back. So stick with us here on the Friday Drive.
This Saturday only, the one day sitcom.
Welcome back into the Friday Drive. Bill and Dan joined by Coach Don Dunn here in the studio. And we normally have him on Thursdays, but since we were preempted for Auburn women's basketball yesterday, David Paschal from the Chattanooga Times Free Press, and I believe doing a little extra duty on WGOW there in Chattanooga, gracious enough to join us here on the Friday edition of The Drive. David, how you doing?
Hey, it is always great to talk to Bill, Dan, and the former unofficial mayor of East Ridge, Don Dunn.
That's right, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks.
That's right.
David, this was off the air, but you never know what you might hear from Coach about his tenure. And we were getting Randy Moss and Chad Pennington stories from Coach earlier off the air, including, was it Deuce McAllister?
Yeah, yeah.
Helping you guys win a big bowl game back when you were at Ole Miss?
Yeah, the Motor City Bowl. Wow. About 40 below zero. beautiful downtown Detroit.
I remember the Motor City Bowl. Once upon a time, Tennessee won the Garden State Bowl.
I remember that well. I remember that.
Yeah, they beat Wisconsin up in the old Meadowlands.
That's right.
And I could not imagine that being much fun.
Oh, boy.
Well, we've got...
Tennessee, actually, if you go back to that era, Tennessee actually kind of had a streak of games that became defunct.
Right.
Because they lost to Purdue one year in the Blue Bonnet Bowl. Yep. Of course, the Blue Bonnet Bowl back in the day was one of them.
Oh, yeah.
The Astro Blue Bonnet Bowl it became. Yeah.
That's right. That was a big-time bowl back in the day.
Uh-huh. I remember the Liberty Bowl being a big one. I mean, oh, yeah. I remember like in 76, Bama, you know, Bama had that great run in the 70s, obviously. And the one year they didn't go like 10-1 or 11-0, they were 8-3 and played UCLA in the Liberty Bowl
yep.
and just beat the you-know-what out of them. But, I mean, that was, you know, I think the Liberty Bowl is like one of the top eight oldest bowl games or something.
Yeah, and that can be a cold place, as you know.
Oh, you're not
Whoa.
Kidding.
Yeah.
You're not kidding. Well, and David, we were just talking a little while ago. I mean, bowl games mean, you know, have meant less and less through the years. But, my goodness, now that you have 12 teams in the college football playoff, I mean, it's hard to imagine them being very meaningful at all. You don't even know who's going to be able to field teams with opt-outs and transfer portal guys.
Very true. And I tell you what, it's not just the meaningless bowls. Earlier this afternoon, it's interesting. You know, Tennessee's best linebacker at the beginning of the year was Keenan Peely, a seventh-year senior. Well, he went down with an ACL early in their overtime win over Florida. And so, really, Tennessee's top two linebackers this year have been Arion Carter and Jeremiah Thielander, a couple of sophomores. But they've also got another young linebacker named Jalen Smith, who's kind of emerged as that third linebacker. He doesn't start, but he plays a lot, and he's the first, you know, the first to come off the bench. He announced that he's going in the transfer portal, and they're getting ready to play in the playoffs.
Wow!
Now we were just talking about that. It's not unusual. It happened, you know, it happened last year. But, I mean, that
it's jarring to think pre-playoff game
yes,
a guy would
exactly.
bail on his program. That's the one thing that I thought.
A guy who's playing, getting time, playing time.
Yeah, so that one's Tennessee, I think, is up to 5. You know, and that's what's so wild is Tennessee's had, like, an incredibly upbeat year. I mean, it's the first year of this 12-team playoff, and they're one of the teams that's in. So, yeah, to just have everybody bolt already. And some of them I get. They've got a running back named Khalifa Keith from Birmingham, who's their fifth. I mean, he's fifth string, so I get it. But, yeah, to basically have your third linebacker before the playoff, just, I mean, that's where it's just kind of like, okay, I mean, I assume there's an NIL deal out there for him, but, I mean, you're not guaranteed another playoff trip the rest of your career, and you're guaranteed one right now.
Well, that is, yeah. Well, that's what we're in right now. I mean, I feel like I agree with some of the coaches I heard that they're glad at least that the signing period now is wrapping up. At least you don't have that on top of having to negotiate with players entering the portal and if your team's preparing for postseason play.
Yeah, and that has been a topic this week. I guess this is only the second time it's ever been in front of the conference tournaments, but of course, conference championships. But of course, the other exception was the COVID year, where you know the last week of the regular season was like in mid-December instead of Thanksgiving. So you know, I know Kirby Smart talked about it on a Zoom yesterday that they had with Sarkisian and Sankey, and he's just like, "There's no perfect time to do it," but the logic does make sense. See what you can get out of your recruiting class, and then start addressing that portal.
David, what are you expecting tomorrow in the SEC championship game? It feels like it's an odd SEC championship game because we've never had a situation where both teams are guaranteed a spot in the playoff going into the SEC championship, just because of the size of the playoff, right? I mean, before you didn't have – I don't know if you ever had an SEC championship game in the 4-team playoff era where you knew both teams were still getting in regardless of what happened. I wonder how that impacts, you know, the fact that really these are two teams playing for the SEC championship but also playing – more for seeding than for inclusion in the postseason. I wonder how that impacts the game.
Yeah, it's just so weird, the dynamic. I'm such a traditionalist. I think I've said before, I go back to 2004 when Auburn beat Tennessee, and just that was Auburn's first SEC title in 15 years. And I know that Auburn was the team left out of the like, come on now, there's a championship you're supposed to be celebrating here. And a lot of people did, but a lot of people were still talking about the BCS. This one's weird because it seems like the motivation, you know, is more for the buy. And in turn, and I get it because, I mean, this is the first time ever that we've had a situation where if you lose your conference championship, you've got to turn around and play in 2 weeks. And so I know Kirby was hitting on that really hard yesterday, saying, you know, we really want to have the rest. There's a lot of motivation to win this thing to have the rest. Now, for traditionalists like me, I hate hearing stuff like that because you love to, you know, win the league to be the best in your conference. And Kirby definitely did say that winning a conference is definitely the marker of a successful season or one of the markers. But, yeah, we're just in this era now where you're playing for seeding and rest.
Yeah, you are, and you've got situations where Rhett Lashley bringing up the other day a way of being able to opt out. I don't believe that most conferences are going to let teams just opt out of championships, but, you know, Rhett talking about, well, what if COVID prevented us from playing there? Just to make sure that we don't drop down, because that's the big concern now. Ward Manuel had said earlier that, you know, he didn't see penalizing a team for losing in a championship game, and now he's definitely backtracked on that.
Yes, I think you've got to be careful when you're the chairman of not saying too much. I mean, I did think it was interesting that he said that all the teams that have completed play, their relationship to one another would not be affected, because after the TV show the other night, I actually got on the conference call to ask about, you know, Tennessee and Ohio State and their pecking order, because as of right now, them giving it to Ohio State means Ohio State would host Tennessee if it happened this week. Mm-hmm. But, you know, somebody on the call brought up the fact that, well, what about a South Carolina? Would their resume not be enhanced if Clemson beats SMU this week? They would have had a win over the ACC champ. And Ward Manuel said, no, it wouldn't affect him. Just like if Clemson lost, it wouldn't affect him. We have done all the analysis on South Carolina. There's no more data points to go over, which is a very different world from the BCS because, as you know,
those
computers would, you know, ingest more information and move teams up or down accordingly.
And I don't disagree with that. I think everything, if you're going to use that data, you don't need to just stop it when there still would be more data points for tomorrow, and there'd be fewer tomorrow because there are fewer games.
Right. No, I do miss the, and I'm not, you know, part of that is bias because I used to vote on the Harris poll every year, and you know, it was the Harris poll and the coaches poll and the computers, and they were the third. And I mean, you know, it took a little bit of a math brain at first to figure it out, but once you got used to it, it all made sense, and you could follow it. And now we're just, did you realize that not even 13 members voted the other night on the committee? One was out of town and just wasn't even there. So you had 12 people, and it's just like
crazy.
You know, reason alone stands to say that wouldn't it be different with 13 after you have 12 vote on
it? So what you're saying is Rhett Lashley needs to figure out who's sympathetic to SMU on that committee and make sure the other guys don't show up on this weekend is what he's got a Pelican brief his way onto the committee.
Yeah.
No, I think kids Rhett out there. Knows that the playoff for Rhett and SMU starts this weekend.
Oh yes.
Yep.
I mean that is
they win. They win. They're in. They lose, and I feel pretty confident they're out.
I mean the good news. The good news is for the ACC is they're not going to get zero in like last year. But the bad news is, and it does seem like it's going to be a second straight year without Florida State in the in the postseason. But it may not be.
I'm pretty sure of that one.
It may not be a tremendous selection Sunday for the ACC, even. You know, even if they win, because we were talking about the beginning of the show. I am pessimistic about 11-2 SMU being included in this postseason.
Well, I figure if ten and two Miami's not, then 11-2 SMU probably won't be either.
Well, I think it's the matter of the TV networks letting everybody on the committee know that we would much rather. Actually, they wouldn't let them. Yeah, they would declare it. It's like, we are going to have Alabama Notre Dame. We are not going to have SMU Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. David, any with recruiting sort of winding down, you know, what caught your eye here in the last 72 hours?
You know, it's kind of more of the same when you think about, I think, 8 of the top 11 teams are in the 24-7 team rankings. 8 of the top 11 are SEC. Certainly a nice year for Auburn.
Yeah, they're definitely an exception when you look at the records of the teams around them.
Mm-hmm. Correct. But, you know, and it's interesting because, you know, every year Gus Malzahn was there until that last one, he had a class that was kind of in that 6-10, 6-12 range. And, you know, realistically, you know, as someone who covers a lot of Tennessee and went to Auburn, I've always kind of viewed them in that same kind of category. They kind of need to be in that 6-10,
yeah,
6-12 range. But, you know, I don't know about you guys, but it's just the timing of it is weird. It's been, you know, there's more, even on Wednesday on our show, on National Signing Day, there was more news when you have a couple of SEC quarterbacks, you know, Jackson Arnold, whose dad mm-hmm. grew up here, you know, getting in the portal at Oklahoma, Connor Wagman at Texas A&M. It's almost like those are bigger news stories than anybody who commits and signs that day. But, you know, it's still, no matter when you have that thing, there are going to be a lot of flips. I mean, Tennessee had 25 signees, three of them they peeled off of other people, and three teams peeled off players for them, including Auburn, who got that Baltimore defensive lineman, Darian Smith.
Yeah, the one thing that, you know, once the dust settled and I looked at it, that's a little discouraging for Auburn. Is this the first time, David, I can ever remember Auburn not pulling a top 25 player out of the state of Georgia?
Okay. I did not realize that, but at the same time, it's just unbelievable what they did in Alabama.
No, you're yeah. right.
But it is. And it's unbelievable what Alabama did, given that they didn't do that well in Alabama. So,
no kidding.
I mean, it really is strange. I did not realize that. Boy, it takes me back to when I was there mm-hmm. with Pat Dye and just the job he did in Georgia every year. That was,
yep.
And it spilled over into Bowden. Bowden had some success in Georgia, too, as well. But, yeah, that's interesting. I had not realized that.
David, I'm assuming you're going to be in Atlanta for the SEC title game tomorrow?
Yeah, this one's actually a lot of fun because you see writers that cover teams all over, and this is kind of the melting pot for that. And so it'll be good seeing lots of folks. I'm sure there'll be a lot of talk about Bob Holt, the Arkansas Democrat
Gazette
writer,
sadly passed away. Right.
What a unfortunate thing that was. I mean, you know, you think about all these, you know, press conferences and getting back up to the press box and the steps or the hills you got to go up and different things. And, you know, I'm someone that runs every day, so that's not a deal for me. But I do see where sometimes, you know, especially if you're in a hurry and you're on deadline and, you know, I know the weather was horrible and it snowed, but, you know, hated that for him because he was so good at what he did, really good at localizing everything to the Arkansas angle, which mm-hmm. is what he's paid to do. But he was just a really, really good one, both on the football and basketball front. Just a great guy to deal with.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up and mentioned him.
Yeah, there's so many tributes out there to a Bob Holt that people should check out from folks who knew him and got the pleasure of getting to getting to experience his work at, you know, media days and year round in Arkansas. Nolan Richardson compared him to Columbo. Said he was like a guy who
he knew the
answers, but he wanted you to say them, and he would ask the questions that way. And I thought that was like a perfect tribute to Bob Holt.
That is, you know, he had this nasally voice. He had mm-hmm. these, you know, he had these glasses that looked like the bottle of the bottom of a Coke bottle. But it's funny because you couldn't get one in on him. I mean, I remember media days a couple of years ago when Cal was at Kentucky and Bob Holt asked him a question. He said, You talked about so-and-so from Arkansas. I wanted to ask you, and Cal goes, why do you always ask about Arkansas? And Bob Holt, just without missing a beat, goes, why do you always talk about Kentucky?
That's great. Hey, David, we really appreciate you spending a little time with us here this afternoon. Hopefully we can get back on the regular schedule next week after the playoffs are determined, and we'll look and see how everything goes with, well, people still will be jumping into the portal, but I'm sure there will be some players that have made decisions by this time next week.
Yeah, no doubt. That's definitely a release the hounds moment on Monday for sure. That's going to be a wild, wild day.
All right, David. Again, thanks for joining us. Have a good trip down to Atlanta. We'll talk to you again. Have a great weekend.
All right, you guys have a great weekend. Take care. Good hearing from you, Don.
You too, buddy.
David Paschal from the Chattanooga Times Free Press, and he has his show Sport Talk on WGOW there in Chattanooga every day, 2 to 5 our time. We need to get to break. Stick with us here on The Drive.
And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Let's get right to The Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar and Yellowhammer. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon. So tomorrow, Georgia and Texas play, and I've seen a lot of both of them, and I have a good idea where I think it will happen there. But tomorrow night, Oregon is playing Penn State. I've seen precious little to nothing of them, and I was just wondering, what you think of that? Where are they playing? What's the line? All kind of stuff.
It's Oregon is a slight favorite in the Big Ten championship game, which is played at the Indianapolis Colts Stadium, Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. Oregon has been the best team in the regular season this year. They're undefeated, 12-0.
They are now. They had a great ball game with Ohio State at home. They beat Ohio State in a very, very tight ball game, and then Ohio State beat Penn State. So, I mean, but again, the game's not going to be played in Eugene, so I would expect a really good ball game. This Oregon team is really good, though.
Saw tickets as low as like $10 on the secondary market for the Oregon Penn State game. Maybe that's in part because of Indianapolis not being too centrally located to either of the campuses. Maybe that's because both of these teams are in the playoff and they're going to be playing bigger games than
down
this one after this game's over. Including, I mean, the loser of this game is going to get a home playoff game. Like the winner, the winner's probably going to be
The winner's got to buy. The loser's going to play up the first round playoff game at home.
Also true in the SEC championship game, which I think impacts the stakes a little bit, right? Because it's not as though, like in a previous era, these would have been two teams playing for a spot in the
desperately, playing for a spot in the playoff, and the loser would have just gone, you know, would have been out of the playoff. Now both teams know they're in. So it's not as much, I mean, obviously pride of hanging the championship banner. But, I mean, for some teams, I feel like some teams would rather be in a spot where they're playing and like their draw a little better than having that bye.
What would a 4-team playoff look like this year?
The Big Ten winner, the SEC winner.
Notre Dame. One loss Notre Dame.
And I don't know. Then the highest-ranked loser of the SEC and Big Ten conference championship games. I think ACC and Big 12 are both out.
No, I think, I mean, maybe 12-1 SMU would be able to fight for inclusion in that spot, but I think they'd have to worry about...
Ooh, it'd be tough.
I think they would need a Texas win. They would probably need an Oregon win.
That's right. They'd need the higher-ranked teams in the SEC and ACC to win.
Texas, Oregon, Notre Dame, SMU, if they won the ACC, maybe, or two-loss Penn State could maybe still break in something. Like, they don't have to have these conversations this year, but it would make this, like, tomorrow
would be huge.
Would be far more compelling with a 4-team playoff. I'm not saying that's the right system, but that's the way it is now.
Great stuff, Yellowhammer. We have been behind since we got behind there with Tiger Takes. We'll get to our final break, back to wrap things up here on the Friday Drive.
When we have the opportunity to assist residents of this county, we are pleased to offer options in an effort to make your business with us as convenient as possible. You may visit any of our three offices, one in Auburn, one in Opelika, and in Smith Station. We are open to serve you.
This Saturday only, the one-day sale at Jewelry by Design, 590 North Dean Road, just down from Kroger in Auburn, with discounts up to 60% off the entire store. Additional balloon discounts and doorbusters throughout the day. Plus, sign up.
And Coach Don. Don, you got work tonight in the cold?
Yeah, I got to go crank it up. Yes, sir.
Oh, man. You were saying you've got some... A family Christmas stuff going on next week.
Yeah, next weekend. Going to meet Donna's sister up in LJ, George, up in the mountains.
Could be a little cool up there.
Yeah, could be, but so far it looks decent weather. And, David's referring to East Ridge. That's where Donna, my wife's from, East Ridge, Tennessee. Oh, so yeah. He gave her a plug.
Well, I mean, he knows. I mean, it's amazing. David Pascal knows, I mean, so much about everybody and every school.
Yeah.
It's great when we're able to get him on. But, yeah, as we were talking there going to the break with Yellowhammer, I mean, it is crazy how much different these conference championship games. We talked about, you know, you don't know how important they are now. But, I mean, it's much less critical as far as getting in, obviously, when you got 12 teams in a playoff as compared to four.
Yeah, it's changed. But still, if you're in that game, you want to win it, like you said earlier. And I look for some good games tomorrow. And there's a couple tonight that would be interesting.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder, Rich Rod has been – we haven't talked too much about West Virginia opening back up.
I heard his name today.
Neil Brown let go earlier in the week.
Definitely.
I think that's going to be, and that's a good AD. That's Ren Baker, who was at North Texas for a long time. He's hired some good coaches. He's made some off the wall decisions.
Right.
Do you go at West Virginia with an up and comer, or do you look at Rich Rod and or Jimbo Fisher as guys who are
Jimbo's definitely been mentioned.
Very prominent
West Virginia man.
Yeah. I wonder if that would be if that's you know, debates going on up there in Morgantown.
Well, I mean, if you're gonna if people are worried about are those guys too old or something, if Belichick can at 72 can be in the picture at North Carolina,
girlfriend.
Yeah. So. Wow. Yeah, so I mean, there are a lot of things to be watching. You got some coaching jobs, more news coming from the portal. I would think by the time we're on the air Monday,
it'll be crazy.
There will be a lot more players that have jumped into the portal since they only have 20 days to get in. All right, we're just about out of time here on the Friday edition of The Drive. Again, Don, thanks a lot.
Thank you, guys.
And
you can catch Wings 94.3. We'll have the basketball action on Sunday morning. ESPN 106.7. We'll have the women's game.
You know, and then Wings Facebook's going to have the parade. So all that coming up. We're back with you on Monday. Brian Matthews joins us. That's going to wrap it up for the Friday edition of The Drive. Have a great weekend, everybody. We are out of here. Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.